they're drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Piffles Podcast, episode 40 shows. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Ferlin.
Without Amy this week, as she has to work because real life sucks. But you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow our Piffles account at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Give me a follow at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
Amy is at CFL Hottie Bowl. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're also on Instagram, just search Piffles Pod, and make sure you check out our new website, piffespodcast.com. Got a bunch of articles on there already, previous shows, and we're going to have a lot more content coming up in the season coming up on the website. So make sure you check that out. And as always, Piffles Podcast, fueled by Coney Island Poutine Cafe, the best poutine in the prairies. Two locations in Regina they deliver, Coney Island Poutine Cafe in Regina. Coming up on this week's show, we'll have the latest Rider news, which again, won't take us very long. Our Piffles player profile. We're going to do a two-parter here. We have two guys coming into studio a little bit later. We won't tell you who they are just yet, so make sure you stick around for that. We're going to learn more about the Grey Cup Festival with Janine Richaud on the Grey Cup Festival board, and she's going to give us a little bit more information on the Grey Cup coming up in Ottawa in November. And we're going to continue our team-by-team previews by taking a look at the Calgary Stampeders, and we'll see if a rant takes us anywhere this week. So let's get started. A lot to get to this week. Rider news. Training camp starts on Sunday. Football is here. Everything, the workouts are going to be starting. We're getting to see Vince Young right away and the rest of the team, obviously. But the big story going into training camp, obviously, is Vince Young. Is he going to be the starter? We'll talk a little bit more about training camp next week once we actually get some news coming in about it. Right now, it's just everybody's going to be, all the players are going to be heading up to Saskatoon in a couple days just to get ready. And but guys, it's here. Football season's finally here.
It's so great to have football back. All off season, it just feels like something's missing. But with camp rolling in, and when this show releases tomorrow, we're going to be 4 weeks out from the season opener.
Yeah, it's an awesome time of year. I can't wait for everything to get started, and it's going to be a good year.
Well, no new signings or cuts to talk about. The only real Rider news that we have this week: the draft picks. Top two, Cameron Judge and Darius Bledek, they still haven't signed their contracts. And Cameron Judge, other than Jeff Gray, is really the only, I believe he's the only first rounder who hasn't signed with his team yet. And we saw this last year with Josiah St. John. He held out. The Riders wanted to not necessarily lowball him, but they wanted to reset the pay structure for first round picks. And that's kind of what they're doing again this year. We saw Winnipeg's first overall pick this year. He got $88,000 in guaranteed money, which is crazy for a rookie player. When a player sees that, another player getting it, hey, how come I don't get that? Because every player feels like he's the best player. So we have our number two pick, or our number two overall pick, Cameron Judge. He's probably thinking, hey, why am I not getting that too? I'm better than this guy. Who's at fault for these guys not being signed?
You know, there's a problem when it comes to resetting the market. Like you said, all nine teams have to play along. And clearly this is just a Chris Jones thing, because other teams aren't having an issue with the market value of players as they are. You're seeing everybody else signed. Now, is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. And the one thing I do hope is Cameron Judge and Darius Bledek are looking at Josiah St. John's comments late last year saying, I wish I would have come to camp. Because if you come out of camp, you are a better player than if you join the team 3, 4, 5 weeks in. Yeah, it's nice to get that extra bank, but you got to look at bettering your football career, and the best way to do that is get through camp, see what that professional camp is like, and build from it. So I don't have an issue with what they're doing, not one bit.
Yeah, I think Judge and Bledek need to maybe look at where they're at and think that, you know, maybe they need to prove themselves a bit, take a slight bump financially now, but you know, down the road that could easily come back and get made up for in the future with you know, their next contract.
The one rumor that I've heard is that the team is looking at trying to do something where they get more money if they're willing to sign on for that third year. That it's the first 2 years they're kind of getting lowballed because they want them to sign that longer term contract at that rookie-ish value. And again, I don't have an issue with that.
Of course, we're seeing the same kind of thing that we've come to expect. Justin Dunk says there's a rift between the player and the team, and John Murphy comes on the radio the other day and says nope, we're still negotiating. There's no bad blood yet. It's just negotiations and nothing's going wrong. Probably the truth lies somewhere in the middle. We just have to hope and wait.
Well, and there's the problem with having a third party negotiate for you. It's not, the players aren't talking directly to the team. It's the team is talking directly to their agent. And obviously the agent wants the player to make as most or as much money as possible because they make more in commission. And that's his job. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, your player hasn't played at the pro level yet. What has he proven? Honestly, he hasn't proven anything yet. So maybe you should take I'm not saying don't be happy with being lowballed, because that's a whole different issue, but prove yourself.
Well, and the one thing I've noticed, you said that disconnect between the third party. If you were just to see it from Bladek's point of view, look at his Twitter. The last couple of pictures he's tweeted out have been him getting ready, training, and very specifically being excited about being a rider or being excited about the green and white. The guy wants to play here. I don't think it's going to be a situation like it was last year. We don't seem to see that venom that there was when everything started last year. They might hold out a little bit, but I have a feeling we're going to see both of them in camp pretty soon.
Yeah, I can't imagine either one of them is going to sit out more than maybe a day or two of camp. So I fully expect them both to honestly sign before camp starts, but if they don't, it'll be very short.
We are releasing this episode on a Thursday morning, so in true, you know, podcaster fashion, they'll probably sign about 2 hours after we post the episode.
Yeah, that's usually the way it works. So
that's where I got my money on the Vegas wet betting lines.
But really, that's all for team news. Really not much going on until training camp. I thought we'd have some signings from some of the players from the mini camps, or even you know, a couple cuts or something like that. Obviously nobody big yet to be cut, but I guess we'll take a look at what happens in training camp starting on Sunday and go from there. And we'll definitely we'll have articles on that. We'll be talking about this next week on the show, so make sure you stick around for that. Now, a couple of the players that I'm actually looking forward to seeing at training camp this year and throughout the season. Joining us for our Piffles player profile this week is defensive lineman Eddie Steele. Eddie, thanks for stopping by to chat with us.
Appreciate it, guys. Good to be here.
First off, how was your offseason?
It was great. Spent it in Edmonton. I mean, had a baby boy 6 weeks ago, so life is great. That's as good as it could be as far as life. Football-wise, I really worked my butt off in the gym, really got after things, and I'm coming to camp ready to go.
So, came from Edmonton. Edmonton decided to change up their ratio, go with an All-American D-line, and they deemed you expendable. How did you take that?
I mean, I've been around the business long enough. I'm going into my eighth year now. I know how the business works. It comes down to money, essentially. You know what I mean? They cut me the day before I was due a big bonus. So I've always kind of seen that play out with other guys. I've never had it happen to myself, never thought it would happen to me. But, I mean, they got me part of the business. It is what it is. I look at it as a great opportunity to move forward, something new. I mean, truth of the matter is, a certain D-line coach I had there in Edmonton, I had him in Hamilton. And the scenario in Hamilton was I was the starter the year before. I got this D-line coach. Then that year he rotates me then that as a rotational player. And then the offseason comes and he cuts me. Edmonton, I've been the starter for the past 3 years. This same D-line coach comes around. I turn into a rotational player. Offseason comes around. I'm cut. So, I mean, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying me and him obviously don't quite see eye to eye or something. I don't know what. He always claims that I'm a good guy and I'm one of his guys, but that's just how it is. It's part of the business. So good to be here.
So as long as he doesn't sign in Saskatchewan, everything's good?
Yeah, I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
So you ultimately chose Saskatchewan as your new team. Why did you pick the Riders?
Chris Jones, big factor in it. He started texting me instantly when I got cut, you know, what's going on, what happened. You know, I won a Grey Cup with him and this coaching staff, had a lot of personal success with them a few years back when they were in Edmonton. So he was a huge deciding factor in why I want to be here. Clearly, who wouldn't want to come and play for a new stadium, you know, inaugural stadium? That's pretty something special. Rider Nation, man, I'm from Winnipeg, so, you know, I know the hype. I grew up with the hype. I went to U of M, and I know the rivalry and the battle between the Prairies. And flat out, I just wanted to be a part of something special. You know, I know what Rider Nation, the passion they have, and I'm really happy to be a part of it. And when I signed, honestly, no word of a lie, me, my wife, we were receiving messages via social media, all the different platforms welcome us to Rider Nation, and you know, it's just a really good thing, and really happy to be here.
How did your family back in Winnipeg take the news?
My stepmom says when she puts the green jersey on, it's going to burn her skin, so she's going to wear a Blue Bomber shirt underneath the jersey. But no, for the most part, everybody's happy because, to be honest, coming home closer to home, you know what I mean? I'm from Winnipeg, so it's only, you know, hopping a skip away. I got drafted to Hamilton, so that's cross country, so it was difficult for a lot of friends and family to get to see me. Edmonton, you know, it's still 12 hours from Winnipeg, so it's difficult for people to get out there. So to be here with the hype around the stadium, it's pretty special just to be so close to home, be back closer to a support system. So that was another factor why I signed here.
Now, you mentioned fans as one of your reasons for signing here. What do you see yourself bringing to the team and the fans of Saskatchewan?
Well, what I'm going to bring to the team is just some physicality up the middle. I mean, there's no denying the team lacked a little bit of that last year and just experience. So I'm going to bring my presence. I'm going to bring some leadership. Like I said, I'm going into my eighth year of pro ball. I've been around, won a Grey Cup, been to either a Grey Cup or the conference final past 3-4 years now. So I know what it takes, you know, as the big man sitting next to me, you know, he knows what it takes. Been there, done that. So that's a little bit of what we're going to bring to the table this year.
So training camp begins right away. How do you prepare for the two-a-days and everything else that comes up in training camp?
Well, you know, having gone through the Chris Jones training camp, I know what it's about. I'll warn Derek right now, get ready to run. A lot of straight running, double barrel, offense, defense, just go, 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 go. But the thing is, we run and we work hard, but he really takes care of our bodies. You know, people think he's crazy and a madman running us into the dirt, but it's not like that. We get our work in our short allotted time. You know, we do the power practices. It's not like 2 days where we're just thugging it out like the olden days when I first got in the league. So we get the work in, get off the field, and then mandatory ice baths, and he really helps us get our legs back in order to perform the next day.
Now, outside of football, you just mentioned that you had a baby boy. That's obviously taken up, you know, your time. But what keeps Eddie Steele busy?
Well, I spent the off-season in Edmonton this year working a little bit, you know, doing a little bit of sales, just thinking about life after ball, just trying to make some money in that aspect. In the past, I've been going back to Winnipeg. I'm a founding partner in a training company called Recruit Ready, and that's on-field training for some youth. I mean, you look at hockey and why Canadians are so good at it is because they're playing year-round, right? And that's why we're lacking in the football department. You look at Americans down in Florida, down in the warmer states, they're playing ball all year-round. They're the best ball players. So our philosophy is we get the kids playing ball in the winter. It's more or less a broken down football practice. We have a coaching staff. I'm the D-line coach. We break it down into individual. We do one-on-ones, all that, Skelly. And it's at the Golf Dome, and that runs in the winter months from January to April out of Winnipeg. And it's in the morning, 6:30 to 7:45, so the kids are coming before school. They're dedicated. And it's really grown. We're going into our fifth – it was the fifth off-season this year. Started with 40 kids, and now it's snowballing into 180 kids. So it's really grown into a serious program and well-known across Canada, so it's something pretty special.
Now, if you weren't a pro football player, what do you think you'd be doing?
That's a good question. All I've wanted to do is pro football player, so to be honest, I don't know. That's all I've set out to be since I was young. That's all I know. I'm doing the sales, though. I've been around it my whole life, so I'm pretty good at the sales game. You know, it's all about how you deal with people, relationships with people. So I can excel at that, but I'd probably say that, but no, I'm doing what I set out to be at a young kid. So some kids want to be astronauts, some kids want to be doctors. I'm living out my dream, what I want to do.
Now, do you have any hidden talents that you have that maybe you're a little bit ashamed to admit?
No, nothing that I don't have anything in the closet, no skeletons or anything like that. I can cook. I like to cook. You know, that's not a hidden talent, but I consider myself a pretty good cook. I know that's pretty generic, but no, I'm definitely above average. in the kitchen. So I cook a lot. I like to cook. That's kind of my my release. I like to spend time in the kitchen and do my thing.
What's the go-to meal?
I'm on the barbecue, to be honest, when I'm cooking. I'm on the barbecue. I can grill up a perfect steak however you want it. You tell me. I'll grill it however you want it, get the sides done up, and, yeah, take it from there.
So have you had a chance to be in the new stadium? And if so, what are your first thoughts when you walk through those doors?
Yeah, I've been in there the past week since last Tuesday. Beautiful facility. I mean, top-notch, state-of-the-art. You're not going to get any better than that anywhere you go. It's honestly like a little spaceship in there. You know how modern and, you know, sleek and flashy it all is. How the locker rooms, it's all like motion censored, and it's pretty nice stuff. You got the barber chair in there. Not that I need it or anything, but no, it's pretty cool, man. It's next level, and I mean, it's a big draw, a big factor, big reason as to why I'm here. You know, like I said, I'm from Winnipeg. Opening day for the stadium is Canada Day against the Bombers, man. That's going to be something pretty hype. That's going to be a real live game to be at, that's for sure.
Now, you mentioned gentleman next to you also with the barber. There's a gentleman there that's going to be in the barber seat quite a bit, I imagine. We actually we have Derek Dennis, offensive lineman, in with us as well. Derek, I heard that you might have some questions for Eddie here.
So my question for you, Eddie, is being you're a D lineman, you have a lot of experience in this league. Who would you say was the toughest offensive lineman you've had to go against so far?
That's funny. I was going to go this route with you, brother. I got a couple answers to that. When I first got in the league, Soompas. Oh, freak, man. He was Dimitri Soompas, next level freak, because he was so strong there at guard. He was a mauler. But lately, to be honest, just because I battled him for a decade, I know he didn't play much last year, but Brendan Labatt, you know, he's been just a stud in there for 9 years, and I've been playing him since I was in college. You know, he was at the U of R, I was at the U of M. So him, he's definitely been a tough one for me. I didn't get to see you much, so you know what I mean? You're out there. But I'll see you in camp. I'll see you in camp, Bone Crusher.
I'm looking forward to that, actually.
Uh-huh. Me too. Oh, me too. Me too. I know what's coming.
All right, Eddie, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Appreciate that, fellas.
All right, now, as we mentioned, Derek Dennis sitting here with us as well, waiting patiently for your turn on the mic here. Derek, first off, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Congratulations on last year's Most Outstanding Lineman Award.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to have that kind of talent join our team this year. You mentioned when you signed here that it was about getting paid, and I personally commend that, because you don't hear a lot of pro athletes say in the media, I want to make bank, right? Yeah. You don't hear that. Why Saskatchewan? Was it just about getting the best offer?
No, it wasn't really about the best offer. I mean, it's nice to get paid for the type of player that you think you are, the type of work that you put in. It's kind of just a reward for, you know, all the work we put in the offseason to make our bodies fast, strong, and go out there and perform at a high level. So it's only right that we get compensated for that. But for me, it was just more about overall experience, man. Coming here, I just felt like with the type of player I was, the type of player that I think I could be, like, I honestly don't even think I've scratched the surface of what I could play like. So for me, it was just more like being in the atmosphere where if I performed at a certain level that I think I could, and go out there and be in an environment where the people love football, you get the excitement, you get the experience in games, you know, sellouts, you get fans who will genuinely care and know about who you are and love everything about you and the fact that you want to represent their city and represent their team. So, I mean, not to say that any other team in the CFL doesn't have that, but I don't think that it's at the magnitude that you get here in Saskatchewan.
Now, you also mentioned at the time when you signed that Toronto's front office was a bit of a mess. How close were you to signing in Toronto during free agency?
I mean, I don't like to talk about it too much because it's in the past, man. I try to focus on just being a writer and focus on bringing my talents and bringing the winning tradition here to Rider Nation. But, I mean, I'm an East Coast guy. I mean, I grew up in New York. I'm a New York City kid, so Toronto's not very far from home. You know, it would have been easy for my family to come see me and spend time with me and come watch me play. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is my life. This is my livelihood. This is my career. I got to make decisions that's best for, you know, my family and my future and for me to do the things in life that I want to accomplish. So, I mean, yeah, there were things that were attractive about Toronto, but I mean, to be honest, I don't think I'm really missing too much by not being there.
So most fans don't really pay attention to the O-line because it's not really a glamorous position.
Yeah.
But what can you bring to the Riders' O-line that was honestly one of the worst in the league last season?
I think I just bring physicality. I bring a toughness. If you watch me play, you can see that I'm just one of those guys that's out there just trying to knock bodies out, man. I just want to put shoulder pads, put hands on people and just be physical and try to establish a certain tone that is expected of an offensive lineman. You know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, offensive line play over the years are starting to get a little more finesse and fancy and flashy in terms of, you know, offenses changing schemes and wanting to be real fast-paced and real, you know, sideline to sideline and not just smash mouth north and south type football. So I try to be versatile enough to play that style of football, whatever, you know, the offensive coordinator wants to do. But I also like to bring that New York state of mind to my game where, you know, if you've ever been in New York City, you know it's an environment that's fast-paced, it's gritty, it's hard-nosed, it's physical, it's disrespectful, it's just all those things. So I just try to put that into my game and just try to use my game as a representation of me and where I'm from and the type of person that I am.
I'll say it. Most athletes suck on social media. For the most part, like, you don't really get much from them. But you've actually... Well, you have an excuse. You have a child, right? So that, we'll let that slide. But you interact with the fans quite often. What is it about interacting with fans on social media that you enjoy?
I think it's kind of, for me, I look at it as like a civic duty as an athlete. I feel like fans spend their hard-earned money to buy jerseys, to buy tickets, to come to the games. They're pumped up about watching athletes play and stuff. So why not even give them more excitement by actually, you know, interacting with you, talking to you, not trying to be, you know. When I see certain athletes, when they hit a certain level and it's like, you know, they start making money and they start getting fame and they start getting this, and then everything becomes a little snobby because they just don't want to deal with people. They don't want to have to, you know, answer questions, the same questions over and over. You know, it's kind of, for me, it's like I went through a part of my life in my career where no one wanted to talk to me. No one wanted to sign me. No one was even letting me play football. So for me, I relish in it because it's kind of like, this is what I always wanted. This is what I worked hard for. This is what I spent all those nights and days going to the gym for hours and working out when nobody knew where I was to relish in this. So it's like, I feel like, why not interact with the fans? Why not talk to them? Why not give them excitement? Why not, you know, talk a little smack? I feel like it kind of, you know, certain leagues, especially like the NFL, how they take away celebrations and they try to monitor guys and guys can't really be themselves and say what they feel and actually exude their personalities. It kind of takes away from them as players and it takes away from the game because personalities is what makes all of us different. You know, you don't want to see the same thing. Like, you don't want it to be robotic and be like everybody is giving you generic answers and giving you exactly what you want to hear. And, you know, be smart with the media. You know what I'm saying? Of course I'm smart with it. I don't get too crazy with it, but at the same time, I try to make it my own thing and exude my personality because, I mean, like, I tell people all the time, man, I grew up idolizing guys like Shaquille O'Neal, and you know, he was one of those personalities where he didn't care where he was at or what he was doing. He was going to tell you how he felt and he was going to go out there and back it up. So that's kind of how I look at it. I mean, I want to talk smack because I want a guy to look forward to playing to me. I want him to be like, yo, I'm gonna shut this dude up because he's talking too much. I want that because it's going to make me play better. It's going to bring my A game out. You don't want to be out there and guys not looking at you. Like, I want guys to fear me. I want them to respect me. I, you know what I'm saying? I want you to think that you're going to knock me out because that's basically what I'm trying to do.
So speaking of social media interaction, one of our favorites
I knew it was coming.
Is on your Instagram account, you rap.
Oh.
If we were to lay a beat down for you right now, could you rap about your career?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I mean, I could. I wouldn't say sometimes my rhymes are not almost family friendly, if you want to say that. But I mean, I could keep it clean for you if you wanted me to.
Well, you know what? We actually happen to have a little something set up here.
Okay.
Now it's probably not the beat that you're expecting, but this, bear with me, this is kind of what we have here.
Okay. Oh, wow, you gave me party rock?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Oh, man, okay, I could try to rap to this. I don't know. Okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, bone crusher on the mic. Yeah, bone crusher on the mic. Yeah, we about to get right. Yeah, Rider Nation, what's up? Yeah, we about to win this cup. Yeah, Rider Nation, what's up? Yeah, we about to win this cup. Hey, Rider Nation, rocking Mosaic. We gonna turn it up and rock this. Ooh, nah, I'm sorry. That's a little something, man. That's a hard beat to rap to.
That was awesome. Trevor Harris, quarterback of the Ottawa Redblacks, yeah. he actually said to us at CFL Week he's a big rapper as well, too.
Really?
So we'll have to coordinate something. We'll get a battle rap.
Get a nice rap going on.
There we go. We'll set that up in the future.
Now tell us, what are you like outside of football?
Outside of football, I'm a happy-go-lucky guy. I mean, pretty much my personality, what you see is pretty much me all the time, man. I like the kid. I like the goof. I like to have fun. Man, I don't take life too serious, man. It's one of those things where, you know, if you really don't enjoy life and you stress too much about the things you don't have, you kind of miss out on a lot. So, I mean, I just like to enjoy my family. Actually, you know, like Eddie, I'm expecting my first child in October. I'm having a baby boy as well. So I'm excited about that, man. Looking forward to fatherhood. Just having fun, man. Enjoying my playing career while I can, and then hopefully turning into something more productive when the time comes for me to hang up those cleats.
Well, congratulations on the kid.
Thank you, man. Appreciate
fatherhood
that.
Fatherhood is a trip. I'll tell you that right now.
So what keeps you busy when you aren't working out or doing the whole football thing?
What keeps me busy? I mean, honestly, I really don't do much. I just train. Probably the biggest thing I do the most is probably play video games, man. You could catch me on the sticks for at least probably about 5 or 6 hours a day just playing, like, you know, NBA 2K or Madden. It's no typical stuff, man. I try to I do other little stuff on the side, like, you know, I went to college to be a I got my degree in broadcast journalism, so just kind of like doing stuff like this is kind of something that I really look forward to doing when my playing career is done. I try to do little stuff in the off season, you know, maybe try to, you know, write up stories and come up with ideas. I'm actually working now on coming up with a concept to do some media related stuff with the Rider Media and the team. Just, you know, something kind of like how Dan Clark has, you know, eating cake with Dan Clark conversations, like something like that. So, my biggest passion outside of football is this right here, like doing media, like talking, you know, to people. And because, you know, I just see it as my personality, it's kind of just, it just fits it, man. I love to talk to people. I love to conversate about anything. I'm actually a big comic book head. I read comics, you know, watch a lot of comic movies. It's kind of a thing I picked up from my dad. My dad was an artist growing up. He liked to draw. So I have tons and tons of classic comic books in my parents' crib, you know, trading cards. I was into, like, you know, the Pokemon stuff and, you know, collecting trading cards and all that type of stuff. So that's kind of just me as me outside of football, man. I'm pretty much a big kid, man. I just love to have fun. You know, I do every off season. I do my youth football camp. I do a free clinic back home. I'm trying to, you know, work on expanding it to do it in different areas. You know, I'm going to try to do one up here in Saskatchewan in the future and do some more stuff back home just to try to introduce football, because of being from New York City and being from New York, you know, football is kind of a lost sport in that realm, because there's not a lot of fields and not a lot of grass. Everything's concrete. So I'm trying to just do different things to just kind of leave a legacy behind for myself. Like, I don't want people just to look at me and just think, you know, I was just a football player. You know, I want people to look at me and see me for the person that I am, and try to, you know, leave something behind where people look at me and go, you know, that's a solid guy, man. I would love to know him. I would love to be around him, type of thing.
Now, you mentioned the comic book thing. Ryan from the CFL Horseman kind of let that slip to us. We had him on earlier here. What is your go-to comic book? What's the one out of all of them? I'm a big
African American superhero fan. So, like, you know, guys like Luke Cage and the Black Panther and excuse me if I'm not correct, you know, saying it's correct, but the Black Green Lantern, when the Green Lantern was black, you know, the black guy. You know, I'm into, like, just stuff like that, just because, you know, I'm a big Marvel head, and Marvel was kind of like one of the first comics to actually go about having African Americans displayed in a superhero type of setting. So I was always a big Marvel guy. I read DC as well. Marvel's kind of like the, you know, the benchmark. You know, DC's still trying to catch up to Marvel still to this day. So even in the movies now coming out, man, Marvel movies and DC movies, it's not really, you know, the same. I was just having a conversation with my dad, you know, last week. We were just talking about all the upcoming Marvel movies that was coming out. Cause I know they're coming out with Second Avengers. They're coming out with. I watched all the Netflix series with all the. I'm losing my train of thought. But you know what? Jessica Jones and Iron Fist and, you know, Luke Cage for putting together that group. That I know that show is coming out soon on Netflix. Looking forward to the Wonder Woman movie coming out. The Black Panther movie comes out next year. I know they're doing Aquaman as well. So that's kind of like, you know, my thing. I'm into stuff like that. You know, I've never been a good drawer, but I can read comics all day.
And one final one before we let Eddie come in here and ask you a question. Sean Lemon. You know, you couldn't
what's up,
not ask you about
him. I hope
him.
He's listening. Because I know everything I do is he likes to listen. And he'll text me like, yo, bro.
So everybody's kind of seen the Twitter beef back and forth. So what is it about Sean Lemon that kind of gets you going?
I think it was just the fact that, you know, Sean was one of those personalities. You know, I think what he does is a good thing for this league because he brings a face and a personality to it, which makes it different from any other league. I think that's what I like the most about the CFL is that they let guys be themselves and do stuff like that with no type of, you know, rapport or worried about getting, you know, reprimanded for it or anything like that. So it was like kind of one of those things where I saw a niche to be like the superhero to take out the bad guy. And it was kind of one of those things where last year before the season started in Calgary, you know, people may not realize it, but I was always talking smack even before even anybody knew who I was. It was just kind of one of those things where nobody knew me, so it wasn't very noticeable. And I remember one day Lemon was talking smack to Bo Levi, talking about how he was going to get a whole bunch of sacks on him and all that. And I actually had played Lemon in college. And when I played him in college, I played left tackle at the time. He was an end. I think I was a sophomore. He was a senior. And so I kind of like, you know, just jumped in it. It was like, yeah, you're not going to get any sacks on him while I'm protecting him. And he was kind of like, oh, who are you, bro? You're nobody in this league. Like, you've never been here. So it was kind of fun. Like, when I seen him at Grey Cup week, after I'd been announced the most outstanding lineman, and I was kind of like, what's up now, bro? Can't say I'm not nobody now. So, it's kind of one of those things where I think it's just kind of one of those things where we kind of just push each other to want to go out there and show everybody, you know, the talk is just not just talk. Like I know he's licking his chops to play against me. I'm licking my chops to play against him and Charleston Hughes as well, because now I can let loose on Charleston. It's not practice anymore, so I don't got to worry about not hurting him like I did the first year I got there. I'm actually the reason why he didn't play in the playoffs in 2015, because we were doing one-on-ones. And I don't know why people look at me, they see I'm a big guy, and they automatically think I'm soft. Like, you know, when you see big guys, you think like, oh, it's like soft, it's like jelly, putty, like you're going to touch it and it's just going to move. I'm actually pretty solid. So when he went to punch, we were doing the one-on-ones, and he kind of lost the rep, and he got mad, so he tried to bull rush me. We didn't have any pads on. He went to punch me in my stomach and broke his hand. Bone crusher, see? It's
there pretty. You go, that's pretty.
So it was kind of like one of those things was just like, I was like, yeah, you thought that stomach was soft, huh? You didn't know there's some abs under that jelly. So it was like one of those things where, like, you know, I seen Charleston at CFL week talk smack. I talk smack to Odell. I mean, you know, we call him seven sack Odell because he can't get past seven sacks. Talk smack to Odell. A couple other guys. I mean, I don't really know too many other DNs, man. I mean, I'm pretty sure guys is going to be licking their chops to you know, kind of dethrone me as the, you know, top lineman, and my job is to kind of stay on that pedestal. So I'm looking forward to it.
Eddie, want to jump in and
got
a question here for Derek?
Two part question.
Okay, what's going on?
Similar to what you asked me, but who's the best, first of all, pass rusher that you played against this past year?
Pure pass rusher. Well, Charleston and Lemon are pure pass rushers because neither one of them plays the run.
Fair enough.
But if I had to pick a top one, I mean, I didn't play against Charleston in games, so I don't really know how he is in games yet. But, I mean, I'll give Lemon his due. Out of everybody out of last season, he probably made me work the hardest of anybody, I would say. I wouldn't say it was the best. He kind of made me work a little harder than I wanted to.
All right, and then you touched on it. Who was the best DN that you played? Gave you the most challenges?
I mean, I would say I actually like playing against John Chick.
I was about to say Chick.
Because Chick is like, he's physical.
All game.
All game. Like, he's going to come at you full go from first whistle to last whistle. Like, he's not going to stop. So I actually like playing against Chick for that simple fact is that he's actually going to challenge you every play.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the guys like, you know, like Lemon and Hughes who they sandbag a couple plays and they see the opportunity to get a sack and then they go get it. And everybody's like, oh, he had a wonderful game. He had a sack. And it's like, yeah, but he took off the 40 plays before he got that sack. Like, what?
I feel you.
I don't, like, as a lineman, it's kind of like me. Like, as a football player, we know what it takes, you know, what we put in every day to play this game. So it's like, I mean, yeah, if some guys are talented enough that they could do that. But for me personally, I just don't respect it. So the hardest player, I would say, I would give it to John Chick. Yeah, I would say he's the toughest DN in the league, mm-hmm. hands down.
I don't think there's many people in Rider Nation that would disagree with that.
Oh, no, not at all. I know he had a great career when he was in green and white.
Well, Derek, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me, fellas.
And Eddie, again, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Eddie Steele and Derek Dennis joining us here on the Piffles podcast. Great signings. Two of the best signings we had all offseason. There was a lot of signings. Derek Dennis, still, that's the best signing of the offseason. You get the most outstanding lineman coming to your team, you're laughing.
Yeah, throw in a starting defensive tackle and
Canadian, too.
Yeah, that's
helps the ratio.
That's a hell of a pair.
Yeah, I had a great time talking to him, and I'm excited for this season after this whole winter of everything that's happened.
should be a lot of fun. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, check out our website, piffelspodcast.com, for much more content. But who's up for a rant? I know I am. Let's get to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Now, earlier this week, we did hear some semi-team news coming out of the wins with a Justin Dunk article that Carm Kartiri would no longer be the voice of the color commentator for the Rider radio broadcast. Now, I know all of us, we've grown up on Carm Kartiri on the radio, and it'll be weird to have somebody new in there. But my rant is a little bit about the response. And it's not so much those that are sad to see Carm Kartiri go. Those that are sad to see Carm Kartiri go, it is more aimed at those who think Carm Kartiri leaving the Rider broadcast team is going to have any effect whatsoever on the football team itself. We know, or we've heard the rumors that Chris Jones had his hand in this move, and whether he did or not, zero part of what Carm Kartiri does affects the team's record at the end of the season. We've seen people go off that because of this move, the team is going to finish worse in the standings, that we're looking at another 5-11 season, that this is just yet another example of the trouble that Chris Jones brings. That's all we've heard over the last couple of days since this was announced. To those of you that are going that route, stop it. This is not going to affect the team on the field. All we're going to see is a couple of hiccups from Luke Mullinder when the season starts in his first few broadcasts, and then we move on. That's it.
I kind of compare this to when a fan favorite player leaves. I mean, Carm was in that role for 28 years. That's a long time, and for a lot of people, that's all they know. So it's completely understandable that they're sad to see him go, but at the same time, just like when a player leaves, another one has to come back in. Same kind of scenario here. Carm Kartiri is gone, but we're bringing in Luke Mullinder, who was a fan favorite player for a number of years, and I'm sure he'll be a fan favorite color commentator for a number of years too.
Now, the only issue I have with that comparison is with this change with the fan favorite player moving on, that might actually have an effect on the team on the field. I don't see how this affects the team.
Yeah,
stop worrying.
It's completely unrelated, and there's a very good chance that Chris Jones and the Riders had nothing to do with Carm Kartiri losing his job. Harvard Broadcasting is its own independent company. They just happen to have a partnership with the Riders. Maybe the football ops said something, maybe they didn't. But to blame Jones specifically for Carm Kartiri losing his job is just ridiculous.
And even if he did, why does it matter? How is it going to affect the team on the field?
It doesn't. That's it.
And from what we know of Chris Jones, who lives and breathes and craps football 100% of the time, I don't think he's too worried about the color commentator to get him fired.
I personally want to wish Carm Kartiri the best in his post football career. He was good at what he did for many number of years, but all things come to an end, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Melinda brings to that broadcast.
It's a new stadium, new beginning for a lot of things.
But you know what does have an effect on the game? The wave. And this thing went off on Twitter. Now, so here's the story. The Riders tweeted out a video of Rob Bagg saying, come on, Rider Nation, let's go. We saw a couple years ago, I think it was 2014, they had a bunch of players, you know, muddle the huddle, let's go, make noise. And, I mean, us as season ticket holders, hardcore fans, we don't need those videos to get pumped up to make noise on defense. A lot of fans do, and that's perfectly okay. When they first came out, I was opposed to them, but you know what? It worked, and ultimately it made the stadium louder, which is the goal. So I have no issue with it. I got over it pretty damn fast. But anyway, so the Riders tweeted out a video of Rob Bagg getting this video done up for his shoot here, and you can be get ready. You can be loud on Canada 150 and all that kind of stuff. So I quote tweeted them and said, "Can y'all do some that tells people to shut up on offense and stop the wave?" Because the one thing that we see when the wave is on, they always do it on offense. And I hate the wave to begin with, but I could be okay with it if you're going to be loud on defense. So the Riders replied back to me and said, as a club, we vehemently oppose the wave. We will do our best to thwart any attempts of this on game day. And I thought nothing of it. So I was out shopping the other day when this happened, and I looked at my phone half an hour later, and there was like 80 notifications. And I was, what the heck is going on here? So I look at my phone and I start looking, and everybody's just going off. A lot of people hate the wave as well. That's what I learned. But a lot of people saying, well, they're professional players. How does that affect them on the field? Well, how it affects the players on the field is on offense. I say in quotes, you're supposed to, but you're supposed to be quiet while your team is on offense. Give them the best communication with each other so they can, if there's an audible in the play, so that they can go and make their changes and hear the snap counts. And that's why we're allowed on defense, is to mess that up for the opposing team.
Well, and you mentioned the... God damn it. You mentioned earlier the need for these videos and that we as fans don't need it. But I saw firsthand that there are fans that don't understand that you're supposed to be quiet on offense because of the discussion with the wave. I had a back and forth with a guy who was fairly certain that you could make noise on offense and that it was completely normal and completely acceptable. And no matter how hard I tried to convince him otherwise, he was sure of it. So those videos actually, when I, like you, I wasn't really sure of them when they came out a few years ago. I finally get it.
Just a couple things for me to mention. One, the video was awkward AF. It just looked completely ridiculous for Bagg to be standing there in front of a blue screen waving his arms and...
Almost as awkward as a mid-20s guy using the term AF.
Yes, exactly. The second thing is, I kind of see the need for those videos mainly as a new fan of The Rush. The one game that I went to there, they actually had a whole spiel at the start of the game saying from the announcers in stadium saying, this sport is a bit different. We make noise on offense and we be quiet on defense for the communication. So it's a complete reversal from football. And, with the new fans, a bunch of people coming into Regina and into Canada, we're going to have a bunch of new fans, and they may not know all of our football etiquette that we've come to just know naturally.
Yeah, sometimes we kind of forget that we've been around football 20 to 30 years, that this stuff does come naturally to us. To some, you do have to learn it. So these videos are great, and I love the Riders for their response.
I thought they were joking at first, to be completely honest.
I'm actually surprised they responded in the first place.
for a team that's not usually heavy on social media, to as a fan response, they were quite open on that. I'm almost speechless on it.
I'm just surprised that, like, if they were going to say anything, it wasn't just, we encourage fans to have a good time. And just keep it, like, generic like that. But to take one side of it and say we oppose this vehemently, like...
And their tweet on Wednesday, to waive or not to waive, what kind of traditions do you want to see carried over and what new traditions do you want to see at the new stadium? I think this is great that they're involving the fans. Who knows if they'll take any of these suggestions or how they can actually implement any of them, but it's great to see them actually involve fans for once.
No, I can't disagree. I can't agree more with that. I wish they would be a lot more open with their fans and a lot more communicative on social media. So it was a great first step, and we saw a lot of great responses from there to wave or not to wave. So, Alex, you may have opened up a Pandora's box that I think might better the team.
I underestimated how big this ended up getting because I didn't think it was, like, to me, it's a non-story. Like, whatever, people are going to do the wave because you're always going to get that one jackal at the stadium that wants to start the wave. And we've seen the NFL commercial where they have the one guy standing out or trying to get the wave going and you down there, I see you down there, let's get the wave going, woo! And, like, you always have that one guy that's going to try and start it. And, I mean, the last couple of years we haven't had a lot to cheer about for the Riders, so I don't really blame them for doing the wave the last couple of years, especially in the games where we actually did fairly decent and played well at home. But it's just, it's one of those football etiquette things that you learn, to me, and I'm just kind of surprised that the Riders, I underestimated how big this got. I hate the wave. I wish it would go away, go back to the 80s and die where it belongs. I mean, it's going to happen. I'm not going to be happy with it when the first game of the year people are going to do the wave. It's going to be the first home game is going to be Canada Day, and people will be ready for a party and having a good time. Kickoff in the brand new stadium, it'll happen, and I will be absolutely angered by it.
The one thing I just realized, and I'm looking forward to this now, is when people do the wave, it won't distract us, Steve, because we are in the front row of the end zone, so it won't get in our way.
No. And you were just going to be the drunk guys in the front going, let's start the wave!
Yeah, probably, and you guys are going to be fired from this podcast if you guys start the wave.
If I ever start the wave, I will hand in my fan card immediately.
Thank you. Anyway, that's enough on the wave for now. We'll see if it gets any bigger than it actually did. Don't forget, join our Piffles Pick'em group on CFL.ca. Win some prizes. If you followed us last year, we absolutely sucked, so it won't be that hard to beat us. So we'll send out... The link is on our Twitter. It's on our Facebook page. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll find it. We'll tweet it out again after this show, so make sure you check that out. But even though we're getting ready... We're talking football. We're getting ready for the regular season to start up in a matter of weeks here. Some of us are already looking forward to Grey Cup and the Grey Cup Festival. To learn a bit more about what's going on at Grey Cup, we're joined by Janine Richaud, who's on the festival committee. Janine, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. So, Janine, Grey Cup will be here sooner than we all think. First off, how's the planning for the festival going so far?
Well, it's still early days, but I have to tell you that the city of Ottawa is pretty excited to be hosting the Grey Cup. Of course, it's coinciding with our 150th this year, which is a pretty, which means the party will be even more special, I think. So the planning committee is starting to come together, and the folks around the table are starting to gel as a committee. So I think it's going well, and we're going to let the good ideas flow and make sure that it takes us to the best Grey Cup festival we've ever seen.
So for fans like me who are going to be making the trip out to Ottawa, what can we expect from the city and the Grey Cup festival?
Well, first of all, if you have not, as a fan, been to a game at TD Place yet, you can expect to see just a really great new football experience. What they've done in Ottawa at TD Place is just really extraordinary. And if you talk to some of the fans who have been there and who've seen it for the first time, they're all really impressed with what has been achieved at Lansdowne. So first and foremost, you're just going to see a really great new state-of-the-art stadium, which is a really great thing. I know a lot of teams are getting these great new fields right now, so it's a really great thing to see. I think one of the most special things about this festival is, to the extent that they can, OSEG is trying, and the planning committee, we're trying to keep as many events on one site as possible. Now, it's not going to be entirely possible, but Lansdowne itself is big enough. It has enough big restaurants. It has enough, space for parties that almost all of the events can be held in one location. And I just think fans are going to love that, because if you've been to other Grey Cup festivals where you've had to travel across a city and maybe not quite known how you're going to get there, that can be a real bummer. So this is going to be a really great, like, the party is really going to be as concentrated as possible at Lansdowne, and it's just going to be a great way for fans to all be together all weekend long.
Now, I hear there will be some sort of access for the podcast around the CFL. What does that entail, and how will that help our listeners and the league?
Certainly, I think one of the cool things about having the opportunity that I have to be on the planning committee, and as far as I know, this is really the first time that a Grey Cup organizing committee has reached out and kept a spot around the table for a fan, which I think is a really fantastic thing for the organizing committee to do. But one of the great things about being at that table is I'm able to bring forward some of the good ideas that fans bring to me. I'm not interested in what the sponsors want. I'm not interested in what the politicians want in my role on that committee. I'm interested in what the fans want. And through our fantastic podcast family, I know that there's been some ideas already bandied about is there a way to get us more involved as podcasts on the day of or throughout the entire festival. So we've started to have a few conversations about that. I don't quite know what it will look like yet, but I'm certainly hoping that you guys give me some great ideas, what you as podcasters want to see at the festival. And my job is to bring those forward to the planning committee and let them know why this is such a good idea. One of the things that the podcasts, I think, have is just this great diverse listenership. People consume media in different ways. Some of us still read newspapers. A lot of us are starting these new media experiences. And so by letting mainstream media and podcasts into an event like that, I just really think we're going to amplify the message and get a broader listenership and experience for Grey Cup Festival, which is what it's all about as a fan.
Janine, what else can you tell us about the Grey Cup Festival right now?
Well, like I said, it's still early days right now, so there's not a whole lot that I can say at this stage, other than, it is Canada's 150th, so we're really looking for opportunities to showcase the best of Canada. One of the things that I wanted to ask of you guys and of your listeners is to reach out to me and give me your ideas. I'm particularly interested in hearing from people who travel often to the Grey Cup. I think we have a chance to showcase some really special stories and some really special experiences to kind of show just how much of a nation-building event the Grey Cup can be. And so I can't tell you exactly all... Well, and we have to keep some secrets, right? We have to keep you guys on edge a little bit.
That's
for
a little
some
rude.
Of the big, fun stuff that's going to happen. But I can tell you that we really want it to involve the fans. So the more ideas your listeners have and the more you guys want to bring to my attention, my job is to bring that to the planning committee. And no idea. There's something about a pancake slide, if I'm not mistaken, that one of you brought up.
That would be a pancake luge, and
pancake
it will be a thing.
Luge, that's what it was. I can't, I don't want to spoil any surprises for your listeners, but I've made a note of that.
I promise you, our listeners and the CFL will be fully aware of what a pancake luge is by the end of Grey Cup week.
Good or bad.
I don't know if you've ever actually seen a pancake luge before, but I have to say I've not. So I'm a bit worried, but that's part of my job.
Well, I think we were the originators of them, and it's gonna be fun.
Now, how many of you are traveling?
There'll be three of us here.
Okay.
Steve, myself, and Amy will be going.
Excellent. And is it your first time in Ottawa or?
In Ottawa, for me, yes.
For Grey Cup, yes. I've been to Ottawa before. I love the city.
Well, it's just going to be such a great experience, and I can't think of a better event. I mean, right after that, there's of course going to be the outdoor game also at Lansdowne. The NHL is going to have an outdoor game at Lansdowne. I think it's like the next week after Grey Cup. But what a great way for this city to really sort of cap off the 150th. So it's going to be a really great event.
Well, Janine, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And please, please, please don't be shy. Any ideas, even pancake luge, there's no idea that I will not at least consider if I make no promises about the pancake luge. But people can reach me on Twitter at Ottawa J, J-A-Y. And I'm especially looking for people who want to share their stories about traveling to various Grey Cup festivals across the country and what that's meant to them. So if any of your listeners, guys, want to reach out, I am absolutely all ears, and I can't wait to hear stories and ideas come from your fan base.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Janine.
Thank you, guys.
So there you have it, folks. A little bit more information about Grey Cup, but also want your suggestions as to what you would want basically us to cover at Grey Cup. And that's something that we can try and work on with Janine and the rest of the Ottawa Planning Committee for the Grey Cup. So send your suggestions to Janine as well at Ottawa J. Send them to us as well at Piffles Pod. Throw them up on the website, piffles podcast.com, on Facebook, facebook.com/piffles podcast. We're here to take all those suggestions, especially the longtime fans that have gone to many Grey Cups before. What would you like to see different around this year's Grey Cup? So send those to us and we'll do our best to see what we can do. Now, speaking of Grey Cup, we turn our attention to last year's West Division representatives in the Grey Cup, not winners. It's time to get to our team previews. This week, we take a look at the Calgary Stampeders with Ryan of the CFL Horsemen podcast. Ryan, thanks for being here.
A pleasure to finally make it onto the Piffle stage. I like being introduced as the Grey Cup loser, too. I appreciate you guys rubbing that in.
You know, I was trying to be nice and just say representative, but yeah, you guys lost, so suck it. now, the Stamps have pretty much been the class of the West for the last decade or so, and again, it looks like Huff is bringing back a strong team. I know there wasn't a lot of names brought into the team this year, but who do you think is the best signing for the Stamps this offseason?
Bo Landry probably is the guy. I mean, outside of the Stamps that they returned as guys that they brought in, I think Bo Landry is probably going to be the guy that makes the biggest impact from an off-season signing perspective. With us losing Glenn Love to you guys out there in Saskatchewan, that fills a big hole. Glenn Love is one heck of a football player, and so having a guy that started games in the CFL come into that spot, I think Bo Landry's probably the biggest off-season acquisition from guys, of course, that weren't Stampeders last year. If you had to add those guys up, I mean, obviously retaining Marque McDaniel and Micah Johnson on the day before free agency was a bit of a coup, I thought.
Now, you mentioned Glenn Love. One of the costs of being a good team in the CFL is you lose good players year after year. For example, both Glenn Love and Zach Minter left and joined the Riders this year and are likely going to be starters here. How much do those losses hurt the Stampeders?
I like that you didn't say Derek Dennis. I think Zach Minter, he was a serviceable D lineman, but he wasn't a guy that blew the doors off here. Glenn Love again was great on specials, but he could never really kind of crack that starting lineup until the injury to Daron Mayo. So I think what Calgary loses with those two guys especially is depth. And that's hard to find in the CFL, but not the hardest thing to replace. They've signed, I think in the last week we've announced 10 guys signed on the defensive side of the ball that are coming up, and we recorded with Devon Claybrooks on Tuesday night, and he told us of some guys that he's really excited about, and really looking forward to seeing up in main camp and seeing what they can do. So as far as those guys, when you lose players, obviously you never want to lose talented guys, but as you said, it's the byproduct of being a successful team. Guys are going to go to where they can make the most money. John Huffnagel has long said, if you want to be the highest paid guy at your position in the CFL, you're not going to play for the Stampeders, because here the mantra is team success, and that team success sometimes has to come at the financial, to an individual's financial detriment, and so sometimes you have to take 10 or 15,000 less than you want, because that means that we can get another guy that you'd spend another 10 or 15 to get, who you might not get otherwise. So it's about team success here, and really, when you look at the systems, I mean, you look at the players that have left Calgary over the last decade. You could put a fairly good team together out of those players that are no longer here from when Hufnagel took over, and yet the Stampeders just keep winning. So there's a lot to be said about the system here and finding players that are successful in the system rather than finding the best player available and the most talented player available. That guy might not always work out with what you want him to do.
Now, you mentioned Derek Dennis. Obviously, he was off our list. I think the biggest reason is, for some reason, the Stampeders always lose offensive linemen, yet it never seems to affect them in any way. It seems to be a common thing there.
Well, Dave Dickinson was quoted in the preseason phone call here as saying that they say in the CFL, if you can have your same five starting O-linemen, you're going to be fine. And as long as you can have your same starting five, you're going to do fine. And the Stampeders' motto over the last 3 years has been, if we can keep our top 10 guys healthy, then we're going to be just fine. And a lot of that has to do with coaching. You plug guys into the system, and it's been a weird trend here in Calgary. You had the reigning offensive lineman of the year, in Ben Archibald. He leaves. Dimitri Soumpas retires shortly after winning his. Stanley Bryant wins. He leaves. And now Derek Dennis wins and he leaves, and yet still they give up the fewest sacks. So a lot of that, again, has to do with the offensive system that Dickinson runs and Bo being very good at getting away from pressure. So are we going to miss Derek Dennis out here? Yeah, absolutely. He was the best lineman in the league and had one of the best season for the ages, really, at left tackle here in Calgary. And I can only hope that was a statistical anomaly, and whoever sad sack you guys put behind your line will just run them over this year.
That's a little rude. You're not wrong, but
I haven't been on Piffles before. but Andrew in the Empire would have just sloughed that right off. That's who I am.
So training camp starts up right away here. What are the Stamps' biggest question marks going into camp?
Obviously, when you look at the Stampeders, I mean, they bring in a couple guys for competition. The backup QB spot is going to be hotly contested. I think Mitchell Gale, we talked to Dave Dickinson. He's very high on Mitchell Gale and likes what he's seen from him and figures with coaching him and getting into the system, he can be a very good quarterback. And then with Andrew Buckley, of course, you've got a guy that's come through the system and is interested in not being the Canadian QB anymore. He just wants to be the guy that everyone knows as a quarterback. And he had a very good year for us as the third yard or the short yardage quarterback and that goal line quarterback. I think he had 9 touchdowns last year. He did very well. The big question mark is how good is Randy Colling? The Stampeders drafted him number 6 overall, but they moved up to take him with their first round selection, trading up to that pick to get him. And with moving Quinn Smith over to the offensive side of the ball and Junior Turner not expected to be back until Labor Day, Randy Colling's got to be the guy that really stands in for the Stampeders and makes that D-line national spot a viable position. If Randy Colling isn't what they think he can be, then the Stampeders might have a little trouble at that D-tackle spot. But we do have enough Canadians starting that we've got a little bit of ratio flexibility, but I know that they like to have a Canadian in that D-tackle spot.
Now, can anybody in the West knock off the Stampeders from their top spot?
Well, here's the thing. I'm always going to say, and I never... Since I started doing the podcast in 2008, I've always said I expect the Stampeders to go 18-0 and win the Grey Cup. Now, that's from a fan's perspective because I never quite grasp people who look at their team and go, I think they could win 13 games. I mean, as a fan, I never understand the rationale of I think my team's going to lose 5 times. So from a purely competitive standpoint, I don't know that the Stampeders have gotten any worse. But at the same time, BC's added a lot of receivers. You guys in Saskatchewan have added a lot of receivers. If somebody can throw the ball successfully there, you guys might have a lot of success. I think the West is a lot tighter this year, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Calgary in the Grey Cup again.
So prediction time. How exactly did the Stamps finish the 2017 season?
I stand by it every time. 18-0 Grey Cup champions. And that's not, and they're getting closer and closer every year. 15-2-1 last year, and they know what mistakes they made. If you can get that road win in Montreal, which seemingly eludes them, I think the Stamps have it in them to go perfect. They've just got to have the desire to get there.
I can't wait till they lose the championship game again, just like the Patriots did, and lose their perfect season. And we will bring this recording back and throw it right in your face.
Yeah, you do it week one if they lose. I'm fine with that. I have no problem. I have no problem eating crow when it's deserved. I've taken a lot of crap at Grey Cup over the last couple times that I've gone for being as cocky as I am. And they won it in 2008. They won it in 2014. And I had to eat a little crow last year. Including a bet I made with the Red Blacks play-by-play guy, but I had to pay that off at Grey Cup last year, and I lost a little bit of money in 2012. But never afraid to eat crow when necessary, but always happy to stand behind my team.
Now, Ryan, where can we hear more about the Stamps, and where can listeners follow you?
I'm at Podcaster Ryan, so, of course, you can check me out on Twitter. I don't do any of the other social media platforms because no one's interested in what a picture of me looks like. But you can follow me on Twitter, at Podcaster Ryan. Of course, at CFL_Horseman is the website. I encourage everybody to come on over to our forum and check us out. I know everybody on a greener forum in particular says that there is no life over on our forum. That's not untrue, but it's not true either. There's some good quality posting going on over at Horseman, so I encourage people to come and check us out. And of course, you can subscribe to our podcast on both iTunes and Google Play. Look for Horseman Radio. We've got, for my money, the best access to our individual team than anybody has. And our interviews aren't necessarily about the X's and O's of football. They're more about the players and how they came to the CFL and how they grew up and stuff like that. So it's more of a deep dive onto a player's personality than it is about why he may or may not have missed a block on a certain play.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure, guys. As always, happy to come out anytime.
That was Ryan with the CFL Horseman podcast, giving us a preview on the Calgary Stampeders, and always good to rub them not winning the Grey Cup in his face. So, but anyway, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks so much for joining us. We want to send a thanks to Derek Dennis and Eddie Steele for joining us in studio this week. Coming up next week, we're going to have the latest training camp news, see if there's any signings, any cuts, and just see how the team is starting to shape up for the 2017 season. We'll also take a look at the Toronto Argonauts on our team previews. There was no shortage of news coming out of Toronto this year, so we'll talk about them. We'll see if there's a rant and anything else that pops up that we feel like talking about. So until then, make sure you do follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at RealAlexD. You can follow the Piffles account at PifflesPod.
You can follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
Again, don't forget to follow Amy, who's not with us tonight. She's at CFL Hottie Bowl. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And make sure you make PifflesPodcast.com one of your daily website visits. Check us out there. We're going to have a whole bunch of articles. Like I said earlier, past shows are going to be on there as well. So just a good place to get a lot of good sports and rider content. Don't forget to join our CFL Pick'em group for your chance to embarrass us, win some cool prizes. This has been the Piffles Podcast, brought to you by the best poutine in the prairies, Coney Island Poutine Cafe in Regina. Thanks for listening.